You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. As part of an ongoing saga to obtain a contract, today marks the beginning of round-the-clock picketing by New York City fire, police, and teachers unions at Madison Square Garden, the future site of this year's Republican National Convention. Mayor Bloomberg wants the public workers to accept a 5% raise over 3 years, but with inflation averaging 2.25% annually, this is essentially a pay cut. The unions have been working for 2 years without a contract, and officials say they're having a tough time recruiting and retaining after the September 11th terrorist attacks.
Teaching and research assistants at private universities have no right to unionize. That was the ruling of the National Labor Relations Board last week in a case involving Brown University. The Republican-controlled board ruled that RAs and TAs are students and not workers. It was a reversal of a decision made 4 years ago when the board was controlled by Democrats. At that time, the court ruled that graduate assistants should be able to unionize because increased responsibility had turned them into workers.
In other NLRB news, the so-called War on Terror was invoked by Bush administration appointees last week to take away the right of non-union workers to have a co-worker present while in a disciplinary meeting with the boss. Though union members have enjoyed what are called Weingarten rights since 1975, it wasn't until 2000 that the NLRB ruled non-union workers could have the protection of a witness in employer meetings. Ronald Meisberg, a Bush recess NLRB appointee, stated that possible terrorist attacks created a rise in the need for investigatory interviews.
United Airlines has announced plans to delay making payments to its employees' pension funds. The bankrupt airline had its request for federal loan guarantees rejected at the end of June. The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers issued a statement of concern that the United decision threatens the stability of other pension plans. While United has said there are no plans to defer the pilot's pension, the strongest of four plans operated by the company, the airline does plan to defer payments to pensions for mechanics, flight attendants, and counter representatives. Union leaders and industry analysts fear that the airline may be planning to cut those pensions entirely.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new Economic Policy Institute report finds that close to 50% of all stock in the United States is owned by just 1% of the population. In addition, only 40% of people in the U.S. held stock worth more than $5,000. Half of all Americans don't own any stocks at all, including pension plans, which are the basis for a secure retirement. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send your job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job. And you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
Time for another Gooberhead Award. Presented periodically to someone whose tongue is going 100 miles an hour, but who forgot to put their brain in gear. Today's goober is John Cornyn, a little-known U.S. senator from Texas who's trying to become a big name by rewriting the constitutional genius of the founders. Ignorance is a bad quality in a public official, but add arrogance and you've got a dangerous goober on your hands. John's all puffed up with the fumes of arrogance because he's chairman of the Senate's Constitution Subcommittee. The best public service one can offer in this position is to kill politically inspired amendments that other Congress critters are always tossing out, especially in election years. Instead, Cornyn himself has become the premier political posturer, using his position to propose not one or two amendments, but five. For example, he wants to allow members of Congress to be appointed rather than democratically elected in the event that some are killed in a terrorist attack. This has already been overwhelmingly rejected by the Republican-controlled House on the basis that it's undemocratic, unnecessary, and, well, silly. Of course, he also trots out the old right-wing war cry for an amendment banning flag burning, claiming that the 9/11 terrorist attacks necessitate this restriction on the people's right to free speech. In addition, he's pushing one to ban same-sex marriages, an odd assertion of big government power over individuals by a so-called conservative, not to mention that it would make rank discrimination constitutional. My favorite Cornynism, though, is his push for a balanced budget amendment, outlawing deficit spending. This from a guy who has voted for every one of George Bush's budget-busting boondoggles, from Star Wars to tax giveaways for the rich, creating a budget that's now $500 million in the red. If you want a balanced budget, John, just vote for one. This is Jim Hightower saying, what a goober. I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George V.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George V.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Happy Monday. 7 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border, all around the planet. Streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Down from outer space on the Sirius satellite. Beaming into homes all across America. And from terrestrial radio stations from California, North Carolina, and on cable radio network. And with our archives at White Rose Society and on TomHartman.com. You can find it all at TomHartman.com. Anyhow, welcome back. How much help or harm will Ralph Nader do to American democracy this year? This is a question a lot of people are asking. And we're going to get into it in a little more detail down at the bottom of the hour. We're going to get on the line here, the author of a new book called Ralph's Revolt, The Case for Joining Nader's Rebellion. That should be entertaining. And, you know, if you have thoughts on it, I encourage you to call in. Our number, 1-866-889-8894. The news of the day, of course, this was released on Friday, as is usually the case with bad news from this administration. They've got very, very, very competent management of the news cycle. And, but, you know, on Friday it was announced that the amount of money workers receive in their paychecks, to quote the New York Times, an article by Eduardo Porter, the amount of money workers receive in their paychecks is failing to keep up with inflation. As Jared Bernstein, an economist of the Economic Policy Institute, noted, there's too much slack in the labor market to generate any pressure on wage growth. The Times goes on to note that stagnant wages could put a dent in prospects for economic growth. Now, these are really two very significant points that usually get overlooked or missed. And here's why. First of all, you must understand, regular listeners of this program increasingly, I'm sure, are realizing the core of the economic agenda, of the conservative agenda, is economic. And it can be boiled down into two words, cheap labor. From, you know, Ronald Reagan's declaring war on organized labor in the early 1980s, in 1980 when he was elected, fully one quarter of the American workforce was unionized. 25%. And you know, the general rule of thumb is that whatever the unionized portion of the workforce is, another equal percentage are receiving wages and benefits which are equivalent to those who are unionized. So roughly half of America had good pensions, good health care, and a good hourly wage where one person could raise a family and put their kids through school and have a retirement. Half of America had reached that point when Reagan came to office. Now it's 8%. So and the wage on the war on labor is not something that was unique to Ronald Reagan, of course. I mean, this is the conservative agenda. I find it fascinating that whenever cons start talking about being conservative, they frame economic issues in terms of personal choice. Well, you should have personal choice. Whether you want to work at McDonald's or at the gas station. I mean, you know, the reality is that the marketplace is not it doesn't exist in a vacuum. I mean, this was this bizarre belief that Ayn Rand brought to the table that Alan Greenspan, when he got initiated into her objectivist cult, took on. And that was that the marketplace grows out of capitalism. Whereas the founders, Jefferson in particular, but all of the founders, I mean, even the conservative founders like Alexander Hamilton and John Adams, understood that both the market and capitalism grow out of the infrastructure provided by a government. That we, the people, collectively create the economy by creating a monetary system, by creating a court system that can enforce contracts, by creating laws that allow people and constrain people in certain ways from doing business or engaging in fraud. I mean, it's very, very straightforward stuff. And we see here now that the with this collapse of wages that has happened during the Bush administration. I mean, this is really significant. On Friday, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that hourly earnings of production workers fell 1.1% last month after accounting for inflation. That drop, the steepest decline since the depths of recession in mid-1991, which, by coincidence, was the last Bush administration. Don't you find this interesting? You know, Well, it hasn't been this bad since the last time a guy named Bush was president. Somehow, for some reason, the newspapers never quite point that out. But, you know, there it is. The drop, the steepest decline since the depths of recession in mid-1991, came after an 0.8% fall in real hourly earnings the month before last. So, back to back. This has taken a chunk out of people's paychecks. And you know, Greenspan sees his job as keeping this going, making sure that it keeps happening. It's very, very straightforward process. Here's this from the Wall Street Journal on January 27th, 1997. They just laid it out, and I quote, "Workers' fear of losing their jobs restrains them from seeking the pay raises that usually crop up when employers have trouble finding people to hire. Even if the economy didn't slow down as he expected," he, Alan Greenspan, told Fed colleagues last summer he saw little danger of a sudden upturn in wages and prices. Quote, "Because," this is Alan Greenspan speaking now, "because workers are more worried about their own job security and their marketability if forced to change jobs, they are apparently accepting smaller increases in their compensation at any given level of labor market tightness," end quote, Mr. Greenspan told Congress at the time. You know, he's just, you know, very straightforward. His job, and see, here we go. I said that there's two points here, these two quotes from this New York Times article that are just so important. The first was this quote from Jared Bernstein. "There's too much slack in the labor market to generate any pressure on wage growth," which is saying the same thing. Okay. In other words, there's so many people looking for jobs that employers don't feel a need to offer higher pay. And that is bad for workers, but great for corporations, particularly large corporations, the Walmarts of the world. And then further they note, stagnant wages could put a dent in the prospects for economic growth. Now, that statement on its surface sounds like common sense, right? If people don't have money to spend, they're not going to spend money. If they don't spend money, the economy isn't going to grow. But it's the antithesis, it's the opposite of trickle-down economics, of supply-side economics, of Reaganomics, of Bushonomics, of voodoo economics. The Bush economic thinking is that it's the rich people who make the economy go, and therefore we have to give them money. We have to give them more and more. After all, you know, I driving down the street, I don't know, it was a couple of years, 2 years ago, I think, when the big tax cut debate was going on, and one of these right-wing talk show hosts makes the comment, I never heard of a poor man giving somebody a job. Well, actually, the majority of jobs created in the United States are created by small businesses. And the average small business owner in the United States earns in the neighborhood of $60,000 a year. That is not rich. And in fact, the majority of the benefits of Bush's plan, tax plan, went of course to people earning more than $200,000 a year. And Bush is running around saying, you know, that this is a wonderful thing because it's going to help small businesses. It's going to restore small business. It's going to restore investments. Right, you know, as he had said before, you know, here
with a robust package of at least $550 billion and across the board tax relief, we will help create more than 1 million new jobs.
So we pay $500,000 per job, $550,000 per job, to the largest corporations in America, and in tax cuts to people who earn their living sitting around the pool waiting for the dividend check to show up and hope that they will take that $500,000 and create a job that might pay $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 a year. The average job in America pays just a little less than $30,000 a year. And, you know, to some small extent it has happened, although the jobs that are being created are clearly not the kind of, you know, classic good-paying jobs. I mean, the bottom line is that it's really about power. Power determines wages. And the conservatives are essentially saying the power should rest with the corporations. Whereas, you know, liberals, progressives, and people in the middle say, we think the power should rest with us. I mean, isn't that the American way? Here's another. This is from the Wall Street Journal. This is a couple of years back. I'd have to go to the footnote for it. Anti-inflation hawks look for advanced signs that wage increases will begin. Mr. Greenspan, for one, scrutinizes worker insecurity. He has said in recent remarks that he believes a pervasive fear of unemployment has kept wage demands modest. But he's worried that the robust labor market would soon embolden workers to demand more. That was a couple of years back. And here we are again. Here we are again. So this, this is something you must be sensitized to. This is just so important that we all understand this, that the conservative agenda boils down to cheap labor. They're going to toss stuff out. Oh, gay marriage. Hey, pay attention to gay marriage. That's a terror. Guns. Look out there. They want to take away your Uzi. There's a secret agenda to take away everybody's guns. No, I don't think so. Wait a minute. It must be burning the flag. Burning the flag. That was the one that George H.W. Bush, you know, he was about this time, in 1992, George H.W. Bush was pushing his, you know, as he was running for re-election against Bill Clinton, was pushing his flag-burning amendment. It's like anything to distract people from the economic core, the economic basis of the conservative agenda. And here now, you know, very straightforward, the richest 1% saw their financial wealth grow by 109%. From 1983 to 2001, while the bottom two-fifths of America, from the time Reagan became president until 2001, saw their income drop by 46%. third. In that same time, the number of Americans without health insurance climbed by a third, 33%. Tom Hartman with you, 20 after.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the Project for the New American Century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman, available in bookstores everywhere.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
What was it you wanted? Tell me again so I know. What's happening in there? What's going on in your show?
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to call in. Things you have to believe to be a Republican today. Trade with Cuba is wrong because the country's communist, but trade with China and Vietnam is vital to the spirit of international harmony. Yes. Jesus loves you, but shares your hatred of homosexuals and Hillary Clinton. A good way to fight terrorism is to belittle our longtime allies, then demand their cooperation and money. Providing health care to all Iraqis is sound policy. Providing health care to all Americans is socialism. Well, and ultimately, of course, what you have to believe if you're a Republican. It's important to have Ralph Nader on the ticket to help reform America's two-party political system. We're going to get into that in just a few minutes. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Kodak's on the line in North Carolina. Hey, Kodak, what's up?
Good afternoon, Tom.
Thank you.
I called regarding a, I don't know if you've heard of this group, the name of them are We the People for Constitutional Knowledge. I think that's paraphrasing. That's not exactly the name of the group. But they're filing a lawsuit against the a government, and the basis of that lawsuit is a return of tax money. It's the only way in which the private individual citizen has to regress, has in order to get the government to be held accountable for things that are against the Constitution.
For example?
Well, their lawsuit is going to be against a taxing clause, which all of that I didn't understand, but it has something to do with the income tax laws.
Yeah, there's a bunch of folks, and this is not new. In fact,
right.
I was working in radio as a news reporter at WITL in Lansing, Michigan, back in 1970. Or 71. It was fairly. I worked there actually right up until 1978, and so it might have been 72. I don't know. Anyhow, it was early on, and these two guys from the federal government showed up, and you know there were two or three of us in the radio station at the time. You know, there's the guy, the DJ was on the air. I was doing the news, and you know there was. People in the business end of it were there, but he came into there and he got me and the DJ and I think it was the engineer, my recollection, and he took they asked for our driver's licenses, they wrote down all our personal information, very intimidating confrontation, and they had said they were from the Treasury Department, and then they told us that they were busting some tax resistors down the road in central Michigan, southern Michigan. And that they would appreciate it if, for the good of the country, we did not report on it.
Hmm.
And we actually at that actually it was my call, and I chose not to report on it because I was frankly I was like 22 years old or something like this, and these guys just scared the bejesus out of me. And the point of the tax resistors, I learned later, was that apparently the constitutional amendment, and I forget which amendment it is, but I think it was passed 1913.
16th Amendment.
Yeah, okay, the 16th Amendment that authorizes taxation, the income tax, was never actually ratified by the final state necessary. You've got to have two-thirds of Congress and three-quarters of the states to ratify a constitutional amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like one state that said, oh, yeah, we'll do it, don't worry. And so Congress signed it into law, and then they never did it. And so these guys are running around saying this isn't actually part of the Constitution. But, you know, the fact of the matter is the Supreme Court has since ruled, doesn't matter, it's law.
Right.
Tough
but it's more regarding, I guess, the updated version of it. Like I said, I was not really up to date on that particular policy. But also including in the lawsuit is the illegal war that is going on now in Iraq regarding the War Powers Act.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, you know, I'm not familiar with it, Kodak. If you've got anything, post it on our message board or drop me an email, and you know, I'd love to know about it. But
okay,
thanks.
It was just taken over to the federal courthouse today.
Okay, well, we got to move along here, but thanks for the information. I'll track it down and report on it later. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. As part of an ongoing saga to obtain a contract, today marks the beginning of round-the-clock picketing by New York City fire, police, and teachers unions at Madison Square Garden, the future site of this year's Republican National Convention. Mayor Bloomberg wants the public workers to accept a 5% raise over 3 years, but with inflation averaging 2.25% annually, this is essentially a pay cut. The unions have been working for 2 years without a contract, and officials say they're having a tough time recruiting and retaining after the September 11th terrorist attacks.
Teaching and research assistants at private universities have no right to unionize. That was the ruling of the National Labor Relations Board last week in a case involving Brown University. The Republican-controlled board ruled that RAs and TAs are students and not workers. It was a reversal of a decision made 4 years ago when the board was controlled by Democrats. At that time, the court ruled that graduate assistants should be able to unionize because increased responsibility had turned them into workers.
In other NLRB news, the so-called war on terror was invoked by Bush administration appointees last week to take away the right of non-union workers to have a co-worker present while in a disciplinary meeting with the boss. Though union members have enjoyed what are called Weingarten rights since 1975, it wasn't until 2000 that the NLRB ruled non-union workers could have the protection of a witness in employer meetings. Ronald Meisberg, a Bush recess NLRB appointee, stated that possible terrorist attacks created a rise in the need for investigatory interviews.
United Airlines has announced plans to delay making payments to its employees' pension funds. The bankrupt airline had its request for federal loan guarantees rejected at the end of June. The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers issued a statement of concern that the United decision threatens the stability of other pension plans. While United has said there are no plans to defer the pilot's pension, the strongest of four plans operated by the company, the airline does plan to defer payments to pensions for mechanics, flight attendants, and counter representatives. Union leaders and industry analysts fear that the airline may be planning to cut those pensions entirely.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new Economic Policy Institute report finds that close to 50% of all stock in the United States is owned by just 1% of the population. In addition, only 40% of people in the U.S. held stock worth more than $5,000. Half of all Americans don't own any stocks at all, including pension plans, which are the basis for a secure retirement. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
There is a war between the rich and poor, a war between the man and the woman. There is a war between the ones who say there is a war and the ones who say there is one.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with you 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Things you have to believe to be a Republican today. Global warming and tobacco's links to cancer are junk science, but creationism should be taught in our schools. A president lying about an extramarital affair is an impeachable offense. A president lying to enlist support for a war in which thousands die is solid defense policy. And it's important to have Ralph Nader on the ticket to help reform America's two-party political system. Yes, in Michigan, the Michigan Republican Party just submitted 40,000 signatures last week. The Michigan Republican Party, officially, the party itself, submitted 40,000 signatures to get Ralph Nader on the state of Michigan's November ballot. The Michigan GOP spokesman, Matt Davis, said they were merely concerned about third-party candidates being left off the ballot. However, they couldn't name any other third-party candidate that they had ever helped. Well, into this and into the debate around this steps Greg Bates. Greg Bates is the publisher of Common Courage Press, and the which he co-founded in 1990, and the author of a new book called Ralph's Revolt, The Case for Joining Nader's Rebellion. Greg, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, glad to have you on here. Now, you know, Howard Zinn has even come out and said, you know, come on, Kerry is somebody that possibly we could lobby. George Bush, forget it. He said that he's going to vote for Nader, but only because he lives in a safe, in the safe state of Massachusetts. How can you write a book and run around openly suggesting to people that they should jump on the Nader bandwagon when in so many states a vote for Nader, in most cases, most polls indicate, will translate into a vote for Bush?
Well, there are a couple of, that's a great question, there are a couple of important pieces to the answer. One is that, of course, only in swing states is that true. If you vote in Massachusetts or Texas, a vote for Kerry is a waste because we know who's going to carry those states, Kerry and Bush, respectively. In Michigan, where you were talking about before, that's an important swing state. They have 17 electoral votes, and they could potentially be the state that swings the election. People who are thinking about voting for Nader in that state and other swing states have both a lot of power and a lot of responsibility. My book, I don't advocate one way or the other what people in swing states should do. They need to think it through very carefully. There are a number of factors. One is how close is the election? If it were held today, it would be very close. But by the time the election comes around, it may not be close at all. If it's not close, you have a little bit more freedom to vote for, you know, a third-party candidate like Nader or Cobb or somebody else. If it's very, very close and you want to make sure that George Bush doesn't get reelected, then a vote for Kerry might be a good choice. However, I'm very much in favor of people having the right to make that decision, and therefore I support ballot access for third-party candidates in every state. It's the voters that make the choice about who is elected, not the candidates. The candidates are just running on their platforms.
Okay, this you know, you've raised several, I think, really important issues. The first is, it seems to me that there is among people who are advocating Ralph Nader being on the presidential ticket a vast And by the way, let me qualify my comments by saying that in 2000, I'll just be right up front about this. In 2000, I voted for Ralph Nader.
And what state are you in?
I'm in Vermont. And and in fact, my wife and I, you know, had a, shall we say, a discussion about it. She voted for Al Gore, and she was concerned that I was, you know, we didn't know how solid Vermont was or wasn't. You know, I mean, nobody knew. But I voted for Ralph Nader. I also voted for Republican. I voted for Jim Jeffords. I voted for a Democrat. I voted for Pat Leahy, and I voted for another independent, Bernie Sanders. So that's, you know, I am your classic independent voter, I guess. Although I suppose you could say left-leaning, but hey, I voted for a Republican too. Anyhow, but my concern is that there is this vast ignorance, and I use that word not as an attack word, not as a pejorative, but but in its literal sense, people don't know about the difference between American democracy and the democracy of the vast majority of the rest of the world. Ralph Nader has been going around giving speeches where he says, hey, in Germany they have third-party candidates, in France they have third-party candidates, in Israel they have, you know, 5, 6, 7 parties, in South Africa they've got 5 parties. Why can't we have a third party here? And he knows the answer to that question. This guy's a lawyer. He knows how the Constitution was put together. He knows that, you know, proportional representation wasn't invented until 1861 when John Stuart Mill wrote about it. And so why does he lie to people about that, and why does that myth continue? Or do you not know what I'm talking about?
Well, I don't think it's a lie to say we should have more than two parties in this country. The Constitution doesn't mention political parties. We can have as many as we want. Only one can win the presidency, that's true. But we can have many third parties, you know, on working on various different levels. And I think it's important to have third parties represented on the presidential level.
So you don't get it either?
What's there to lie about there? I'm not sure what you meant.
Okay, well, here's what I meant. When the founders were putting together this country, they were trying to figure out a way to have the greatest voter participation, the most democracy, without it being a pure democracy like the Greeks. The Greek pure democracy required 6,001 people to show up to make any changes in the law. In other words, the citizens were the legislators.
Right.
And they said, you know, that's going to be unwieldy. So we're going to have a representative democracy. And, you know, they looked around. They looked at the Iroquois model. They looked at the Roman model. And they came up with what they came up with. And it was really the best they could do. They said, you know, it's and James Madison in Federalist Number 10 talked about, he was very concerned that if political parties emerge, what he called factions, if they emerged, they would cause the system to become less democratic. Because if more than two of these factions emerged, the third faction would always harm the faction that it was most closely aligned with, and you could end up with a situation where two factions together could control, say, 65% of the vote and represent the will of 65% of the people, but the third faction, which only controlled, say, 35% of the vote, would actually get power. And so you'd have a situation where somebody representing the minority viewpoint of Americans could actually gain power in the United States. And he wrote about this. He says, among the numerous advantages promised by a well-constructed union, none deserves to be more accurately developed than its tendency to break and control the violence of faction. The friend of popular governments never finds himself so much alarmed for their character and fate as when he contemplates their propensity to this dangerous vice. The instability, injustice, and confusion introduced into the public councils have, in truth, been the mortal diseases under which popular governments have everywhere perished. So he's saying, please do not form political parties. So this is 1787.
Right.
There were no political parties, right? And he went on to say, the valuable improvements made by the American constitutions on the popular models, both ancient and modern, can certainly not be too much admired. But it would be an unwarranted partiality to contend that they have and as effectually obviated the danger on this side as was wished and expected. In other words, they didn't know how to solve the problem. And you know, we did our democracy, and everybody looked at it and said, well, is that going to work or not? And there was, de Tocqueville came over here in 1834 and said, yeah, it's great, but it's not going to last. Aristocracy is really the best form of government. And then the Civil War happened, and the whole world held its breath. And there were only five or six democracies in the world at that time when the Civil War happened. And then when we held together through the Civil War, the rest of the world said, hey, you know, maybe this idea of self-governance is a good idea, but let's not do it the way the Americans did. And in 1861, John Stuart Mill had come up with this idea of proportional representation, where he said instead of voting for a president and having a winner-take-all first-past-the-post kind of election, you vote for a party. And the party is represented in Parliament based on its proportion of voters. So if 30% of the people vote for the Greens, then 30% of the seats in Parliament are held by Greens. If 5% of the people vote for David Duke's party, then David Duke's party has 5% of the parliamentary seats. And then the Parliament chooses the Prime Minister. And that's how every country in the world, except the United States, Australia, and Greece, do it.
Right.
And that's more democratic. And in Australia, because they started out doing it the way we did it, and they said, hey, this isn't so democratic. You can really only have two parties. And everybody has understood this. They said, you know, the way to fix this is with instant runoff voting. 15 years ago, they institutionalized national instant runoff voting. So the reality is that that the founders blew it. I mean, you know, they did the best they could, but they blew it. They created a situation where you really can only have two parties. And so my question is, number one, why doesn't Ralph Nader talk about that? Because he knows this. I know he knows this. Anybody who's a lawyer in the United States, you know, anybody who's taken, you know, civics 101 knows this. And, you know, why I say, when he says to a group of students at a college, you know, Germany can have a third party, why can't we? It's a lie. It's a rhetorical lie.
But he does talk about instant runoff voting. He does talk about proportional
But we don't have it right
now. He talked about that with Howard Dean. He does talk about binding none of the above, which is if enough people say I don't want any of these candidates, we go back to the drawing board.
But you know, we're all talking about that.
Have a new election.
But Greg, that is not the way.
Lots of different.
I understand it. Just like he was in favor of airbags. And I think that if he was the head of a national group that was out there advocating for IRV, that he could really make a difference. But instead, by running for president, he's going to ensure that Bush gets elected. And he's doing it disingenuously. He's doing it by not telling people how the American system works.
But he's not going to ensure anything. Only the voters are going to ensure who's going to be elected.
Oh, come on, Greg. That's rhetorical.
Well, who is going to make the decision? Who pulls the lever? It's the voters. And so many people are just, opposed to voting for Nader, that I don't see how Nader is, in the end, going to swing the election. He says, right now the polls suggest that he could do it, but he says that his progressive support is going to melt away as they get close to the election. And he may well be right about that. And most people are vehemently opposed to voting for him, so I'm not sure what the problem is.
Well, the problem is that it is not the voters who make the decision. As Ralph Nader correctly points out, it's the people who choose who gets on the ballot who makes the decision. And
well, they limit the decision.
Right,
that's true.
Exactly.
But ultimately, it's the voters. And if you want somebody to vote for somebody other than Nader, I suggest you talk to them, not to Nader. Nader's just running for president. If you don't want me to vote for him, and I live in a swing state, talk to me.
My problem is not Ralph Nader running for president. Or the fact that you know, Ralph is, I mean, I agree with Ralph on virtually every issue that he's out there talking about. My problem is that he is not being honest with the American, and particularly with college kids. I mean, this is where it really gets me, because I have heard some of his speeches on college campuses. And not only does he not point out the difference between the American political system and parliamentary representative democracies all around the world, proportional representation. Not only is he not pointed out, he goes out of his way to obscure it.
But are you suggesting that because we have the system that we do, we can have no more than two parties?
That's not true. That is exactly the case. If you want to have the will of the majority of the people deciding who's president of the United States, until we do what Australia did and pass instant runoff voting, yes, that's absolutely what I'm proposing. And my suggestion is that instead of saying, well, we should or shouldn't vote for Ralph, I think we should or shouldn't vote for Democrats because the Democrats are just Tweedledum and DLC and their corporate money and all this. And I agree with all that. My solution is, if you're thinking about voting for Ralph Nader, join the Democratic Party and subvert it from within, the same way the conservatives did starting in the 1960s with the Republican Party.
But then look what happens. I mean,
look
what happened with Kucinich. He's out there trying to do exactly what you're saying, and has met with some success. But just recently, he tried to put a thing on the platform that said, you know, that the war in Iraq was a mistake from the beginning, and they yanked it out.
And you know why?
Is because he no longer has any power within the party because Kerry's got the nomination.
That's right. Progressives.
The person who has the power is the people on the outside.
Greg,
saying,
the progressives are having a Barry Goldwater moment. You're describing is exactly what happened to the conservatives in 1964. The conservatives had enough control. They had enough representation within the Republican Party to even actually get their candidate on the ballot. I mean, say 1960 might be a better example when they couldn't, but they didn't have enough to actually win the national vote, and they got shut out. They got locked out. And so what they said was, okay, instead of starting a third party, like Nader is doing, or be a third
right.
candidacy, we're going to take over this party from within. And they started a 20-year campaign to do that, and now you've got George W. Bush in the White House representing and advocating policies that in 1960 were considered extremist. And why don't we work to take over the Democratic Party?
He is also, there are limits to that takeover. He's a corporate candidate, just as John Kerry is. Do you think we could take over the Democratic Party and make and succeed in electing a non-corporate candidate?
Yes, I do. I absolutely do.
Well, and why do you think that that's
Because
possible?
It's been done in the past. It was done with Franklin Roosevelt.
Oh, he said himself, you know, I'm the greatest friend of the prophets ever had. The reason Franklin Roosevelt went the way he did was because the socialist Norman Thomas was getting more and more votes, and FDR realized that if he didn't do something between that and the social movements that were happening during the Depression, he wasn't going to win the election.
Well, you know, Greg, the natural extension of your logic then is that any political party gets corrupted by corporations. Why even involve yourselves in politics? I mean, what happens when the Green Party gets to be 40-50%?
The pressure outside of parties can be as effective as pressure inside parties.
Okay, let's
need both.
Let's take some calls here. Ken in Texas, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Ken in Texas is on the line. Hey, Ken,
Hi,
what's
how
up?
How are you?
Good.
Tom, I really appreciate your show, and I agree with you most of the time, and I agree with you now that Nader is a distraction, but our country has a history of more than two parties. We had the Whigs, Bull Moose.
But the Whigs replaced the Federalists.
Yeah.
And the Bull Moose.
Possibly the Green Party could replace the Democratic Party in the future. I don't think it's wise to limit ourselves to the two parties that we have. And as you were saying earlier, the Republican Party is completely different than it was. It has been taken over. It could be named the Corporation Party for, you know, what it's worth. But I just wanted to say that I think our country has a history of third parties in it.
Yeah, we do. We do.
It's not an unhealthy system.
Okay, great. Thanks, Ken. You know, I agree. We do have a history of third parties. And like Teddy Roosevelt with the Bull Moose Party, he threw the election to the Democrat, actually, to the guy he was opposed to. 10 minutes before the hour.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
A state trooper with a good eye stops zebra mussels at a weigh station. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Zebra mussels invaded the Great Lakes as stowaways in the ballast water of ocean-going ships. They might invade the Pacific Northwest by way of recreational boats and interstate highways. In May, an officer of the Washington State Patrol found live zebra mussels on the side of a boat from Tennessee. It was being hauled through a port of entry on Interstate 90. The discovery illustrates the need for boaters everywhere to take responsibility for cleaning their watercraft. Pam Meacham is an invasive species expert with Washington's Department of Fish and Wildlife. She says zebra mussels are a huge ecological and economic problem. They're prolific, and they can change aquatic ecosystems and clog water intake pipes. Meacham says state troopers in Washington are trained to look for zebra mussels on boats at weigh stations, but that only works for boats that are hauled by large trucks that have to stop for inspection. Meacham says smaller trucks don't have to stop.
Vehicles that are less than 26,000 pounds do not have to stop at the scales for the state patrol. There are a lot of people out there with large pickup trucks that are able to haul 30 to 35-foot boats, so there are a number of boats coming through that could be coming in from infested areas with zebra mussels that we're not catching.
Zebra mussels can live out of water for days and can survive a long trip on a boat or trailer. Meacham says that means boaters have to take action to keep them from spreading.
If you wish to have fishable and swimmable waters, then you need to take some responsibility for seeing to it that you do not spread invasive species that will damage your waters.
Meacham says boaters need to be sure their watercraft are cleaned thoroughly before they hit the road. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
The Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
May you grow up to be righteous. May you grow up to be true. May you always know the truth and see the light surrounding you.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour, we're talking with Greg Bates, the publisher of Common Courage Press and author of the new book, Ralph's Revolt, The Case for Joining Nader's Rebellion. And, Greg, let's take another call here. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Tom in Oregon, is on the line. Hey, Oregon, excuse me. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. Listen, apologize if I cut out. I'm driving through the Columbia River Gorge here on the way to Portland, but I'll try and get it in real quick.
Okay.
I think Greg makes a very cogent argument. You know, there was an article in the latest recent Business Week magazine that talked about out of 179 democracies, we rank like 38th or 39th in voter participation, and in the 2002 congressional elections, like 98.5% were reelected, and due to gerrymandering and redistricting and so forth,
yep.
Our democracy is really sick. And I think with corporate influence and so forth, it may take Americans getting real serious about a third party before we can change it.
But if Americans get serious about a third party, and that means George Bush gets reelected and he ends democracy in America with 4 more years, are we really better off?
I understand, and I partially agree, but by the same token, we keep saying that. I mean, we said it in the last presidential election.
Nobody took it seriously.
And our democracy has not gotten any better, that's for sure, in the last 4 years.
Okay, well, we got about a minute left here in this segment, and we're going to hold Greg on over the next hour so we can continue this conversation, because we've had so many callers who want to talk to you. Greg, what are your response to Tom's comment from Oregon?
Well, I thought Tom really hit the nail on the head. We need to get a democracy that's sort of revitalized, and if we don't have a third party responding to the needs of more and more people, for example, like last time you said, before the break, you said that parties end up in situations where the minorities are ruling, and that's certainly what's happening today. Most people want universal health care. Only Ralph Nader and David Cobb are arguing for it. And neither the Republican nor the Democrats represent the majority on that. And I think at some point we need to be saying, hey, we want majority positions, and we're going to push for them.
Yeah.
And hopefully that will help reform the Democratic Party.
Well, I have to say I'm all in favor of third parties at a local level. I think that, at the state level, at the county level, and to the extent that it's possible, Although here in the state of Vermont, I mean, we've got a Republican governor and lieutenant governor. Neither one of them got more than 40% of the vote because we had progressive candidate. Anyhow, we'll continue this conversation. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. As part of an ongoing saga to obtain a contract, today marks the beginning of round-the-clock picketing by New York City fire, police, and teachers unions at Madison Square Garden, the future site of this year's Republican National Convention. Mayor Bloomberg wants the public workers to accept a 5% raise over 3 years, but with inflation averaging 2.25% annually, this is essentially a pay cut. The unions have been working for 2 years without a contract, and officials say they're having a tough time recruiting and retaining after the September 11th terrorist attacks.
Teaching and research assistants at private universities have no right to unionize. That was the ruling of the National Labor Relations Board last week in a case involving Brown University. The Republican-controlled board ruled that RAs and TAs are students and not workers. It was a reversal of a decision made 4 years ago when the board was controlled by Democrats. At that time, the court ruled that graduate assistants should be able to unionize because increased responsibility had turned them into workers.
In other NLRB news, the so-called War on Terror was invoked by Bush administration appointees last week to take away the right of non-union workers to have a co-worker present while in a disciplinary meeting with the boss. Though union members have enjoyed what are called Weingarten rights since 1975, it wasn't until 2000 that the NLRB ruled non-union workers could have the protection of a witness in employer meetings. Ronald Meisberg, a Bush recess NLRB appointee, stated that possible terrorist attacks created a rise in the need for investigatory interviews.
United Airlines has announced plans to delay making payments to its employees' pension funds. The bankrupt airline had its request for federal loan guarantees rejected at the end of June. The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers issued a statement of concern that the United decision threatens the stability of other pension plans. While United has said there are no plans to defer the pilot's pension, the strongest of four plans operated by the company, the airline does plan to defer payments to pensions for mechanics, flight attendants, and counter representatives. Union leaders and industry analysts fear that the airline may be planning to cut those pensions entirely.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new Economic Policy Institute report finds that close to 50% of all stock in the United States is owned by just 1% of the population. In addition, only 40% of people in the U.S. held stock worth more than $5,000. Half of all Americans don't own any stocks at all, including pension plans, which are the basis for a secure retirement. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send your job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now Bush says we're in recovery. And after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
The League of Women Voters has long been a voice of reason and moderation in American politics. But the leaders of the League recently received a searing blast of raw outrage directed at them, coming from a surprising source, their own members. From all across the country, angry LWV members fired off calls, emails, and several shrieks of horror at the hierarchy, decrying a decision the leaders made last year to endorse the use of paperless electronic voting machines in our elections. Since that endorsement was made, there's been a growing awareness that these corporate-owned and operated computer voting systems are wide open to hackers, manipulations, vote theft, and other problems. Indeed, California authorities have banned the use of machines provided by Diebold, Inc. after finding unauthorized software in them and experiencing malfunctions that jeopardize the outcome of elections this spring. Most alarming is the fact that electronic voting provides no paper record of each ballot cast, so there's no way to track the integrity of the vote in case there are suspicions of tampering or miscounts. As a result, there's been a fast-spreading grassroots rebellion against entrusting our democratic electoral process to the handful of corporations that program and supply these treacherous machines. The demand is that the devices must include a verifiable paper record of every vote cast. The League of Women Voters has now joined this rebellion. At its recent biennial convention, some 800 delegates from its local chapters voted overwhelmingly to rescind their leader's earlier endorsement of paperless voting machines. They passed a resolution demanding voting systems and procedures that are secure, accurate, recountable, and accessible. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's a testament to the integrity of grassroots groups like the League that they can inform themselves and correct their course. Now, if only our corporate and political leaders would do the same, maybe we'd get a little integrity back in our electoral process.
When I started this company, our mission was to be the most useful and most ethical provider in the financial services business.
Charles Schwab, founder and chairman of the Charles Schwab Corporation.
When you're dealing with people's money, when you're dealing with their financial dreams, you've got to hold it with the greatest of care.
With industry-leading equity research, trusted investment professionals, and online equity trades as low as $9.95, Charles Schwab offers investors a better choice when it comes to low-cost investing.
It's about service. It's about best value. It's about ethics. It's all those things. That's what we're about every day.
To learn more about Schwab's new lower-cost trading options, call 1-800-7-SCHWAB or stop by a local branch today.
For pricing details, visit Schwab.com. $9.95 for Schwab Trader CT clients or those with $1 million in assets. Advice and certain research available for a fee. Charles Schwab & Co., Inc., member SIPC and NYSE.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program today, sponsored by the Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research, www.cascr.org. Also by futurist Benjamin Krim. You can get a free audio of his work, 888-242-8272, and Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS, our sponsors today. We are talking with Greg Bates, the publisher of Common Courage Press and the author of a new book called Ralph's Revolt, The Case for Joining Nader's Rebellion. And I've been making the suggestion that if progressives are really concerned about presidential politics and really concerned about the future of America, that they should infiltrate and take over the Democratic Party. Greg, oh, and if you'd like to, by the way, if you'd like to participate in the program today, or if you'd like to share your thoughts with me or with Greg, our number is 1-866-889-8894. And Greg, you don't think that's such a good idea?
Well, I think that participating in politics is terribly important, and growing third parties that pressure the parties in the center is also important if we're going to actually create any kind of change. If we just vote for Kerry, if we just work for the Democratic Party, then the people in control of it will keep pushing it toward the right. And if you look at John Kerry's voting record, he's moved relentlessly to the right, so much so that he was, for example, calling for an investigation of WMDs and an invasion based on that in Iraq in 1998, 3 years before Bush ever took office.
But in terms of moving to the right, I mean, this is the entire issue of which direction a party is going to move is going to be more influenced by the people within the party than the people outside the party. I mean, for example, we have a listener, a regular listener in Denver, a guy named Jeff, who, you know, a year ago was calling into the show and saying, hey, you know, I'm all in favor of Nader, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, why don't you try and get involved with the local Democratic Party, Paul? He joined the local Democratic Party in Denver. Yeah. And I think he's actually even going to be a delegate to the convention. And he got that local party, him all by himself, he got them to put stuff like instant runoff voting on their platform. I mean, he's actually changing the Democratic Party. Why can't we harness the power of the enthusiasm of all these people who believe in the ideals that Ralph Nader has been preaching all these years to take over one of the two major parties, the same way that the corporatists took over the Republican Party, and then some would argue, and I'm among them, and in 92, through the Democratic Leadership Council, started the process of trying to take over the Democratic Party. Why don't we take it back while there's still some fragment of it there? There's still the Dennis Kucinich out there.
Well, I would suggest, actually, that our agendas actually work hand-in-hand. Those working outside the party are somewhat softening it up by pointing out that, look, if you keep moving to the right, you're going to just leave all open this space for a third-party candidate or various third parties to walk into it. And meanwhile, people working on the inside of the party can say, look, if we keep moving to the right, we're going to lose the elections and possibly swing things to the left. So I don't think that the people working on the inside and the people working on the outside are necessarily working against each other. I thought it was very telling the other day when Nader and Dean were debating, they played this little clip from John Kerry that was designed just for this debate, and what he said was, I'm running a campaign to make sure that every Nader voter would prefer to vote for me instead. Now, whether you think that's sincere or not, it's at least an acknowledgement that he has to do something. That's positive.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but if the result of it is that George Bush gets elected, it's not positive, it's negative. Let's take a couple calls here.
Can I just answer that one basic question? You know, John Kerry is running against a president who, if reelected, will be reelected with poll numbers more unfavorable than any other president who got reelected in history. How come it is that we think it's dangerous, that it's even a question that Kerry's going to lose the election? How come he's having so much trouble? The reason is because he's running George Bush's platform.
No, I strongly disagree. I would say the reason is because there is the giant right-wing radio talking machine. There is right-wing influence in the media. You've got faux news out there. You've got, you know, all these groups that are pulling the media to the right. And you've got the Republican Party lying to people in their ads
every single day,
and spending hundreds of millions of dollars
to
do
Bush.
It. I'm not sure that most people don't like Bush. But perhaps if you mean literally more than 50%, but
at the polls. Most people don't think Bush is doing a good job.
And most people in the last election didn't think Bush would do a good job. But guess who is president right now? You know, this is without getting into the whole thing about Florida. Anyhow, let's take a call. We're 12 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Dave in Humboldt County, California, is on the line. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Marvels of what can be accomplished with rigged voting machines, I'm afraid. But, Greg, I agree with everything you have had to say, and I agree with everything Tom is having to say, and I agree most of the time with everything that Ralph Nader has to say, and also with Gore Vidal, who says that America now has a one-party system with two right wings, both owned by the worst of corporate interests, one much more so than the other. But I also believe that our host here, Tom Hartman, is given to moments of real genius, and he came up with the idea once, or at least shared, that Ralph Nader could solve this whole problem by choosing to select the same electors as Kerry, and then they could participate in the debates, accept the right-wing money, and in the end, a vote for Nader would not be a vote for Bush. I think Hightower just spoke to the real problem, though, these voting machines. But your thoughts on that, if you would, Greg.
Good one, Dave. Thank you.
I'm not exactly sure what you mean by select the same electors. Tell
well, the way it works, Greg, when the framers of the Constitution were putting together the presidency, they said, okay, the states were far, far apart, and it took a long time for travel and things. And so what they tried to do is create the system that the Saxons had in England between the year 400 when the Romans pulled out and the year 1066 when the French, the Normans came in and conquered them and set up the kingdoms. And there was this little 600-year period of essentially democracy in England. And each local community had what was called a Witan Council, the Council of Wise Elders. And they would select one of their wise elders to go to essentially the national elections and vote for somebody. And so the idea of the Electoral College was that each community would look, people know who lives in their community, and each community would select essentially a wise elder from their community to whom they would trust. They would trust this person to go to Washington, D.C., interview people, and make an appropriate decision for the president. In other words, they weren't voting for a particular candidate. They were voting for electors. Within 20 years, the system fell apart. And in fact, they had to amend the Constitution to change it somewhat. But we still have the Electoral College. And so the point is that when you vote for a presidential candidate, you're not actually voting for the presidential candidate. You're voting for a local person who is an elector. And in most cases, that elector has already pre-pledged their vote to somebody, although they don't actually have to cast their vote for that person. And there have actually been cases in the last 100 years where electors have been voted, the people voted for them, assuming that they're going to vote for candidate A and they voted for candidate B. And so if Ralph Nader, in selecting his local electors, was to select the same individual human beings, the same individual people who have already committed themselves to Kerry, then when you vote for Nader, you're voting for that elector, or when you vote for Kerry, you're voting for that elector. That elector is going to go to Washington, D.C. and say, okay, it's Kerry. But because you push the Nader button on your local vote, it's recorded as a vote for Nader, and for purposes of federal matching funds, for purposes of bragging rights, all that stuff, Nader gets it, for purposes of making a statement, and yet it doesn't ensure the election of George W. Bush. This wasn't my idea,
That's a fascinating idea, but it then just removes the pressure on Kerry, because Kerry says, well, I can do what I want, because a vote for Nader, is no pressure on me. That's no good.
So we're back to the situation where you're willing to risk George W. Bush becoming president in order to make a point.
Well, I'm willing. Democracy is a risky proposition, and when you have voter choice, there is a risk there that voters will choose to vote ways that you don't agree with. But if you don't agree with them, I'm suggesting you ask them to vote and argue with them and not with the candidate. The candidate's just running for election.
Yeah. Okay. 1-866-889-8894. Our number, 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program. Hank from Michigan's on the line. Hey, Hank, what's up?
Actually, Dave took some of that right out of my sails here.
Okay.
I was thinking, vote for Nader, but if there was some way you could then let him turn his vote into whomever based on negotiating what that his party platform was. In other words, if we wanted something that Nader wanted, I'd say, I'd vote for him. In fact, I'd vote for him now if he were a major candidate very easily. Otherwise, I would vote for Kerry just to tell the rest of the world I'm not happy with what Bush has been doing.
Well, right? And don't you think, though, Hank, that Kerry actually has some good stuff going for him?
Sure, I do. I really do. And I think he's wish-washed or bounced back and forth because everything changes day to day.
Well, and the reality is, if you want flip-flops, look at George W. Bush. He's been all over all kinds of issues.
Yeah, but he's just trying. He's trying to get back in water.
Anybody who quotes Kerry as a flip-flopper is basically reciting the Republican disinformation campaign.
Yeah, but I don't see it as that.
Yeah. Okay. Hank, thanks for the call. It's Greg 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Greg, what do you see about John Kerry that you agree with?
Oh gosh, well he says he's pro-choice, but he also says he'll appoint anti-abortion judges.
I have read in the news that Kerry has actually said that he would make a litmus test, contrary to even Al Gore didn't say this. That any judge who was openly anti-abortion, he would not appoint to a federal bench.
He says he'll appoint them, provided it doesn't interfere with Roe v. Wade. That was in the New York Times In May, I can look up the site at some point. But he has said, I will vote for, you know, I'll suggest anti-abortion judges as long as Roe v. Wade is not touched, which I think is playing with fire, because it means if an anti-abortion judge was listening to the case in San Francisco on partial birth abortion recently, that would have been a victory for the right rather than a victory for the pro-choice people, and it would have been a disaster.
Kerry, all his life, has voted pro-choice. I mean, in 2008 in the Senate, he has absolutely.
Look what he's saying now. He's saying, and just the other day, he said, I believe life starts in conception. Well,
well,
that's okay, but he's making more and more noises that suggest that people who are opposed to abortion can vote for him.
Okay, we've only got about 30 seconds left here. Let's just real quickly, Chuck in New Mexico, your comments, Chuck?
Yeah, I'm just reminded by a comment by, I believe it was Clemenceau, who said, politics is the art of the possible. And I think what we've got to do here is realize, as much as we may disagree with some of the things Kerry says, he's the better choice. We have to go that way. I don't like it really in the main, but I got no choice.
Okay, Chuck, thanks a lot. Greg Bates is the publisher of Common Courage Press. Greg, thanks for being with us today. The author of Rouse Revolt, The Case for Joining Nader's Rebellion. And, Greg, is there a website real quickly?
Yeah, commoncouragepress.com.
Okay,
great. Get my book off that.
Okay, cool. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Greg, for being on the program. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer. The new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told. If you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
to discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges.
To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Come, writers and critics, you prophesize with your pen. And keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin.
And welcome back.
And there's no telling who that it's naming.
Well, we'll find out on November 2nd, won't we? We'll find out who the pen is naming. Because the times, hopefully, the times they are a-changing. I find this whole thing just fascinating. In fact, if you've noticed, we have a new sponsor, the Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research. And they're, you know, running an ad in the program in our National Minutes that says, please don't vote for Ralph Nader, because if George Bush gets another term, more people will die because of a lack of research into stem cell issues. Their website, by the way, CASCR.org. Recommend you check it out. And, you know, there are really big issues at play here. This is more than just, who gets to be president. I mean, there's really big issues at play here. And frankly, it's not just the presidency. I think it's very important that people be paying very close attention to their votes for Congress, their votes for the United States Senate, the House of Representatives, and for their state offices, their county offices, their local, right across the board. We need to be paying close attention to this. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jim in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Jim, what's up?
I would like to address the Nader issue.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, well, you mentioned that there needs to be more than two voices in local politics, correct?
Well, my point was that the Greens have succeeded in almost 300 communities in the United States now, including San Francisco, for example, in getting
right.
instant runoff voting passed. There are a couple of states, I believe New Mexico and Colorado, I could be wrong, where there's actually, you know, they're probably within a few years of getting it, you know, the constitutions of these states amended or getting laws passed so that instant runoff voting will become a statewide phenomenon rather than just a local county or city thing. In those
okay.
cases, you know, I'm entirely in favor of third-party candidates getting in there and mixing things up. But I really think that those of us who are philosophically aligned with the Greens, for example, or here in Vermont, the progressives, that if we really want to create change, what we should be doing is infiltrating and taking over the Democratic Party.
Okay, now instead of using Nader as a throw candidate, why not use the Reverend Al Sharpton, who's been running successfully for the past, four or five elections?
What do you mean?
Yes, he only gets 1% of the vote or so, but still a vote is a vote, correct?
Yeah, but I don't get your point.
Well, I mean, we're pointing a finger at Ralph Nader because we don't understand him. Well, actually, it seems 3% of the population of the United States understand him. And you state that the founding fathers are against corporate, but these Republicans and Democrats, they have the same outlook. You know, they're going to swing with the corporation.
You really think that Dennis Kucinich agrees with George Bush?
Well, I think Dennis Kucinich is very close to green. He's more of a socialist, not a liberal.
Do you think that Paul Wellstone agreed with George Bush?
I don't think many people agree with George Bush.
Yeah, I mean,
that
you know,
not to matter.
Do you think Pat Leahy? I mean, in your community, I mean, Pat Leahy's my senator. There are some sellouts in the Democratic Party, like Zell Miller, but there are a lot of good people in the Democratic Party, and I think that by abandoning the Democratic Party and going for it's possible to do both. You can be a Green and a Democrat at the same time. Why not? I mean, you know, it's like the conservatives, you know, they kept their John Birch Society membership and they joined the Republican Party. And guess what? Now we've got, you know, a Republican Party that is farther to the right than the John Birch Society was in 1960. Largely. I mean, why can't we do both? Why can't we participate, you know, in both? Why? I don't get it. I don't, you know, why people think it has to be all or nothing. It mystifies me. Tell me.
And I don't know. I think on another note, I'm having a hard time understanding how we can be exempt from Geneva laws.
Yeah, well, clearly we're not, and that's, you know, that's going to come back and bite us. That's a whole another topic, but real difficulty for this nation. Jim, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. This is the Tom Hartman Program. You're in the Democracy Zone. Stick around. We'll be right back. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. As part of an ongoing saga to obtain a contract, today marks the beginning of round-the-clock picketing by New York City fire, police, and teachers unions at Madison Square Garden, the future site of this year's Republican National Convention. Mayor Bloomberg wants the public workers to accept a 5% raise over 3 years, but with inflation averaging 2.25% annually, this is essentially a pay cut. The unions have been working for 2 years without a contract, and officials say they're having a tough time recruiting and retaining after the September 11th terrorist attacks.
Teaching and research assistants at private universities have no right to unionize. That was the ruling of the National Labor Relations Board last week in a case involving Brown University. The Republican-controlled board ruled that RAs and TAs are students and not workers. It was a reversal of a decision made 4 years ago when the board was controlled by Democrats. At that time, the court ruled that graduate assistants should be able to unionize because increased responsibility had turned them into workers.
In other NLRB news, the so-called War on Terror was invoked by Bush administration appointees last week to take away the right of non-union workers to have a co-worker present while in a disciplinary meeting with the boss. Though union members have enjoyed what are called Weingarten rights since 1975, it wasn't until 2000 that the NLRB ruled non-union workers could have the protection of a witness in employer meetings. Ronald Meisberg, a Bush recess NLRB appointee, stated that possible terrorist attacks created a rise in the need for investigatory interviews.
United Airlines has announced plans to delay making payments to its employees' pension funds. The bankrupt airline had its request for federal loan guarantees rejected at the end of June. The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers issued a statement of concern that the United decision threatens the stability of other pension plans. While United has said there are no plans to defer the pilot's pension, the strongest of four plans operated by the company, the airline does plan to defer payments to pensions for mechanics, flight attendants, and counter representatives. Union leaders and industry analysts fear that the airline may be planning to cut those pensions entirely.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new Economic Policy Institute report finds that close to 50% of all stock in the United States is owned by just 1% of the population. In addition, only 40% of people in the U.S. held stock worth more than $5,000. Half of all Americans don't own any stocks at all, including pension plans, which are the basis for a secure retirement.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
With your guns and drums and drums and guns, hooroo, hooroo. With your guns and drums and drums and guns, hooroo, hooroo. With your guns and drums
and welcome back.
And guns, the enemy nearly slew you. My darling dear, you looked so queer. Johnny, I hardly knew you.
Remarkable. Welcome. You're here. You're listening to the True People's Radio. Tom Hartman here with you. One of our sponsors, Benjamin Krim, for a free audio from futurist Benjamin Krim, call 888-242-8272 right now. Barbara Ehrenreich writes in a column called It's Over, Ralph, an op-ed piece yesterday's New York Times. She says, I voted for you, yes, in Florida. Speaking to Ralph Nader, I lost friends on account of you. I risked death by sporting your bumper sticker well into the reign of Bush. She says that the first time was tragedy, and I will admit now with hindsight that it was. The second time is predictably farce. Is Ralph Nader engaging in farce? And, you know, another question for the hour, this is something I'd like to get into a little here, is are the Republicans planning on stealing the 2004 election? It's really interesting what John Kerry is already preparing. And basically kind of planning for this thing, getting ready for another attempt, another Republican attempt at stealing an election. It's, you know, your minority party, I guess that's what they think they have to do. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you'd like to call and participate in the program, Harry in Ann Arbor, Michigan's on the line. Hey, Harry, listening Hello. To us on WSDS there. What's up, Harry?
Hello. I'm good and mad. I love to listen to your program. And I'm talking about Nader. Voting for Nader is simply a vote for George Bush.
Amen.
If you want Bush back in office, vote for Nader. And the Naderites talk about there is no difference between Bush and Kerry. If you get Bush in office, you're going to get 30 more years of a Scalia-Thomas Supreme Court.
Yeah, you're right.
I hope you Naderites love that kind of thing.
Yeah. Good point, Harry. I mean, it's quite obvious that the next president is going to appoint at least four justices to the Supreme Court.
Over a long period of time, they live long.
Yeah.
And one thing that bothers me is that you left the Republican spin doctors acting as liberals, get on with you and argue for 10 minutes or 5 minutes whether Nader should be on the ballot or not be in the ballot. Give them a minute and cut them off. Well, we don't need them.
The problem, Harry, is that I can usually pretty much tell when I've got somebody on here who's not who they say they are, and they're just trying to pull the wool over people's eyes. And I think that the callers who are saying that they like Nader on there, by and large, I mean, there's one possible exception, but I think by and large they're people who don't understand how the American system of government works and how different we are from parliamentary democracies.
They're being paid.
May well be. It may well be. I mean, we got a situation, and thanks for the call, Harry. It's great to hear from you. I appreciate it. And thanks for listening to us there in Ann Arbor, Michigan on WSDS. The Michigan Republican Party on Friday submitted 40,000 signatures for Ralph Nader. Why? Because Nader, he thought the Reform Party was going to do this for him, get him on the ballot in Michigan. And the Reform Party blew it. They only got 6,000 signatures before Thursday was the deadline. He needed another 30,000, so the Republicans go out and get them for him. Shouldn't this tell us something? 1-866-889-8894. Jeff in Denver on the. Hey, Jeff, I invoked your name. I hope I didn't take it in vain.
No, actually, I wish I were the hero you said I am. It's been an interesting learning experience working within the party. First of all, I just want makes a comment. And
I got to say, Jeff, I think that you are a hero for participating in the Democratic Party, in the democratic process. And I think all of us need to get involved.
First of all, I'm not a delegate to the national right now, but I've learned a lot, and I've actually been writing about this as I'm writing a kit, creating a kit for people who want to get involved to show them the physics of how the party works.
Oh, how cool.
Because I've learned a lot of the spots where there are very simple things we could have done. Had we come in prepared, we could have had a lot more effect, because you can get something on a platform, but it's also got to stay there for the next level. They can take it off the next level and so forth.
Yeah.
And you'll find occasionally, like there was one case in the state convention where there was an anti-Israel amendment actually basically saying Israel should follow what the UN says.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it was an overwhelming vote for it, the guy up on stage who was moderating the thing said, oh, no, it didn't win. And there was almost a riot. I mean, there are people who were yelling, saying, no, this is not fair.
Yeah.
This one person really tried to stifle things.
This is a party apparatchik. Yeah.
But I would like to talk actually more about the physics some other time. Right now, one thing I want to talk about is people don't realize how easy it is to become a candidate themselves.
Yes.
There are, like, what is it, New Hampshire right now? There's no Democratic senatorial candidate, is there?
I'm not sure, but I know here in Vermont, there are several races where there are open, you know, you can run as a Democrat or a Republican because nobody has come forward in the state races.
There are many cases of federal offices where the mainstream parties can't find good candidates.
Yeah, in fact, Rama Schneider, who's running our engineering here today and catching the phone calls, actually ran for the House of Representatives here in Vermont a couple of years ago. I mean, that's the kind of thing that I absolutely salute. I think it's so important.
And the state legislature, the thing is, I see that a lot of the people who are the, no matter what, we've got to vote for Nader, I see it's kind of a bratty thing, I've got to get my way. And I would love to have my way. I'm one of the biggest idealists of anyone anyone around. But there's also, you've got to have a pragmatic aspect.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we keep looking at the presidential race. You've got to look at the state legislative races and so forth. And if you look at in Colorado, you watch a few people, such as two of the main Democrats of state, Ken Gordon and Andrew Romoff, two great people. They have moved up into big positions of party in the state very quickly. I mean, but mm-hmm. I'm talking quickly, meaning within a decade.
Yeah.
Or so.
Oh, it is remarkable. I mean, there is an enormous amount of opportunity there for people who want to get involved and you know, rather than just sitting around complaining. It is
so easy to become a state representative. Many times these people are really looking for great candidates.
Yeah.
And anyone who's got any oratorial skills and charisma can really do something. Mike Miles here in Colorado, who is very likely to become the senatorial candidate, no matter what the press, how much the press ignores him. The insiders who listen to him are overwhelmingly going for him. And he was a junior high school principal.
Mm-hmm.
And so forth, who really started getting out and doing things. And now he's number one on the ballot, ahead of the anointed attorney general here, who's the other senatorial candidate.
That's great.
Mike Miles is a great example of how a dedicated person can move up, perhaps, we'll see, of course, November, but move up immediately to a senatorial office. Look at John Edwards. His first campaign ever, he became a senator.
Yeah. Yeah, in a state that was, you know, traditionally and recently anyway, the last 50 years or 30 years, largely Republican.
He beat an incumbent Republican who was, you know, it was an amazing victory.
Yeah.
We can do it, and within the party. We don't have to go out and change everything about the party. Just become a damn candidate.
Yeah.
And you get a good salary, too.
Yeah, and get involved. Jeff, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, 18 minutes before the hour. Kerry is building a legal network for vote fights, reports David Halfinger in today's New York Times. His candidate is putting together a far more intricate set of legal safeguards than any presidential candidate before him to monitor the election. Isn't it, you know, here's the upside of this is that the Kerry campaign is putting, you know, here's what John Kerry said in Philadelphia on Thursday, talking to the NAACP. He said, 1 million African Americans disenfranchised in the last election. Well, we're just not going to sit there and wait for it to happen. On election day in your cities, my campaign will provide teams of election observers and lawyers to monitor elections, and we will enforce the law. And that's the good news, you know, is that Kerry is putting together, they're not going to let them steal the vote. this time around. And this is, you know, back when a year and a half ago when I first started writing about voting machines, and nobody, no, you know, it wasn't on anybody's radar screen. You know, Bev Harris and you know, a couple of us were just writing, you know, and I wrote this piece for Common Dreams that ended up getting, you know, sent all over the world. And people were saying, oh, no, what can we do? What can we do? And I said, you know, the only force that has the national power and authority and gravitas and money and volunteers to make sure that the election of 2004 is clean or relatively clean is the Democratic Party. And isn't it weird that the Republican Party is aggressively fighting this thing? In fact, they're actually organizing now their own groups. It's just incredible. The Republican in South Dakota, for example, they just passed a law. You've got to have ID in order to vote. In the last election, they had signs that said, no ID, no vote. Well, actually, you can sign a form saying, I don't have ID because I'm, you know, 80 years old and I can't drive anymore. Don't have a photo ID. And you can still vote. But, you know, they didn't tell people that. They were like, the Republicans are trying to scare people away. Republicans are generally working against more activity, more participation. So Kerry says, you know, no, we're going to take this on. We're going to go head on with this thing. And we're going to do something about it. In the meantime now, the GOP is asking you to turn in your neighbors. Yes, it's true. It's called the Web Voter Project. It started in Minnesota, but it's going national. They have sent out an email to top activists within the GOP, within the Republican Party, asking them to give the names and address, or giving them the names and addresses of 25 people who live in their area, you know, within a block or two of them, and asking them, 60,000 supporters just in the state of Minnesota they sent this thing out to, asking them to go knock on the door of these neighbors and report that information back to the party with or without the neighbor's permission. Right. The Minnesota GOP is one of the spokesmen. This guy named Carlson says, you're more likely to tell your neighbor what your party preference is than when they ask than you are some stranger on the phone. This was outed by the Minneapolis Star Tribune. And they think that this is going to flip Minnesota. Minnesota was won by Al Gore with 60,000 votes, 2% in 2000. And the Republicans are convinced that with this stealth campaign, getting their activists out to knock on the doors of their neighbors and find out their preferences and find out which issues are important to them so that they can then flood them with telephone calls, push polls, and literature in their mailbox about those particular issues that are customized to them, that they can get them to vote for George Bush and get them to forget about all the other issues that are on the ballot. Remarkable. Remarkable. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, what's up?
Hey, I want to say something about Ralph Nader.
Sure.
I think he, in my opinion, is nothing but a shamming Republican.
Well, I disagree. I think Ralph, look at his history. I mean, he's done a lot of really good stuff. I think he's on an ego trip now. But, okay, go ahead.
No. He knows what the math is, and he knows that he can put that moron in again. And he's just playing with the power because I think he's a fake liberal. You know what? He's worth multi-millions of dollars, and he could better use his money than his mouth helping poor people if he really was concerned about the poor people.
Yeah, okay.
That the Democrats cut off of welfare.
All right.
I think the guy is an absolute counterfeit.
Okay.
Now, I want to tell you something else why I think he is. He
Very
sits
quick.
Here right on stage, and he sits there and he says, well, you know, that's a big myth that he hurts the Democrats because he pulled more votes away from Bush than he did from Gore. And that's an absolute lie, and I'll tell you why. Because the Republicans are busting their buns to get him on every ballot.
Yeah, all across the country. And it's no surprise why they're doing this. I mean, you know, it's fairly obvious. It's you know, why would the Republican Party of the state of Michigan deliver 40,000 ballots for Nader to the state Secretary of State's office? I mean, pretty clear. Henry in Santa Fe is on the 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Henry in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Henry, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
This is Enrique.
Oh, Enrique!
Which is Henry in Spanish.
So, uh-huh, yeah. So Armin typed in Henry here. I just, he's playing tricks on me.
Well, you know, I was wondering, you know, what the count is on Nader's, the number of ballots he is on... you know, across the nation, because I know they're trying to get him on in New Mexico, but it looks very doubtful. And I guess Arizona just, you know, he can't make it there. They didn't make the deadline.
Yeah, yeah. And
I sort of was looking through the almanac, and, you know, no Green Party official has ever gotten an electoral college vote. It goes all the way back to, I think, George Wallace as an independent, and Strom Thurmond as a states' rightser, and, you know, Teddy Roosevelt as Progressive Party. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean...
Well, and they all ended up influencing elections. I mean, you know, they all threw the election essentially to the guy on the other side.
I mean,
same thing with Ross Perot.
For Nader to win, you know, if he's only going to be on 26 states ballots,
yeah,
and you know, no electoral college people will vote for him because they're all pledged Democrats and Republicans. I mean, it's pointless to run.
Well, this may be why the Republican Party is so aggressively working at this. There was a thing in the news yesterday that Republican fat cats, you know, you now got this $2,000 hard money contribution limit. In other words, if you or I want to give money to a specific candidate, we are limited by law to $2,000 total. And the Republicans, of course, have all these multimillionaires who historically gave lots of, you know, Ken Lay giving hundreds of thousands of dollars to George W. Bush. So now they're saying, okay, after you've given your $2,000, which is your legal limit to George Bush, give another $2,000 to Ralph Nader. And thousands of them across the country, these Republican millionaires, are doing this. Anyhow, Enrique, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And, and Rama informs me that I blamed Armin for typing. Sorry about that, Rama. It's a Tom Hartman radio program, transforming the world by revitalizing American democracy.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
Children who get lots of exercise risk poor health if they breathe polluted air. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Couch potatoes are in some ways healthier than kids who play soccer, run, or participate in other outdoor sports if they live in areas with high levels of air pollution. Kent Bransford is a medical doctor and a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility, an advocacy group. He cites a recent study of children living in Southern California.
What they did is take children all growing up in the same bad air area, and then they divided them into two groups. One group, very active, playing outside like we probably want our kids to do. So if they were in three or more sports during the year, they were in the active group. And then the other half of the kids were living in the same area but more sedentary, so inside playing with their Game Boys and PlayStations, etc.
Bransford says the results were surprising.
What was very worrisome is that the children that were outside, active, playing, breathing a lot of air, in which children do more so for their body weight than adults, they had about a threefold increase risk of developing asthma compared to the kids who were not as active.
Another recent study looked at California college freshmen. It focused on students who had similar activity levels but compared where they grew up. Bransford says those from Southern California, where smog levels are highest, had more lung disorders than kids from Northern California, where the air is better.
Those college freshmen had decreased lung function studies at age 18, purely related on where they grew up and the air they breathe.
Bransford says air pollution can cause health problems that might last a lifetime. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Will American democracy survive the next election? Frankly, I think it will. But, you know, we've got a fever, let's say. Welcome back to our program, brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-6227, is Small Dog Electronics for all things Macintosh. Our number, if you'd like to participate in the program, 1-866-889-8894, our toll-free number, and Ann in Sarasota, Florida is on the line. Hey, Ann, what's up?
Hi. Follow up on the Ralph Nader phone call that you had just a couple callers back.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that Ralph Nader's new book is being published by one of Rupert Murdoch's publishing companies? And they've also not only gave him a cushy book deal, but a cushy book tour promoting the book. And I sometimes wonder if his book deal with Murdoch has something to do with his election running here and stuff, because
yeah.
I don't know. He's been a good guy in the past and done a lot of good things, but he's also getting to the point in age where maybe he's thinking retirement, and here's a nice chance to opportunity to really do something for himself. So
he's already worth millions. I think he's got his retirement under control. And the interesting point, Judith Reagan, who is whose imprint I think Ralph's book is being published by, also published Stupid White Men by Michael Moore. I haven't gone back and looked at the book, but I'm virtually positive that I may be wrong. We'll find out. I'll find out. But I don't see conspiracies quite that quickly. I think that Ralph Nader could have found any publisher to publish his book. I mean, he's a hot property.
Okay, well, we differ in opinion.
Yeah,
okay.
It may well be that Murdoch was, you know, really wanted to promote Nader and the book tour. I mean, Michael Moore never got a book tour out of the publisher, and they almost pulled the book, and you know, he has a very adversarial relationship with them. So, you know, it may be that the truth is somewhere in between. I think, you know.
Okay.
So,
all right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling, Ann. Good to hear from you. It's just so much going on. By the way. The Army See, here's the thing. We Homeland Security is one of the, these big issues that George Bush is running on. And I think it's it is so important that the National Guard be here to defend the homeland. And where are they? They're all over in Iraq. And now the Army is calling up, it's calling up people in such desperation. They just called up a 67-year-old psychiatrist. Why do they need psychiatrists so badly? Because the suicide rate is 17.3 per 100,000 in Iraq. Higher than it's ever been. It's amazing. Tom Hartman with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. As part of an ongoing saga to obtain a contract, today marks the beginning of round-the-clock picketing by New York City fire, police, and teachers unions at Madison Square Garden, the future site of this year's Republican National Convention. Mayor Bloomberg wants the public workers to accept a 5% raise over 3 years, but with inflation averaging 2.25% annually, this is essentially a pay cut. The unions have been working for 2 years without a contract, and officials say they're having a tough time recruiting and retaining after the September 11th terrorist attacks.
Teaching and research assistants at private universities have no right to unionize. That was the ruling of the National Labor Relations Board last week in a case involving Brown University. The Republican-controlled board ruled that RAs and TAs are students and not workers. It was a reversal of a decision made 4 years ago when the board was controlled by Democrats. At that time, the court ruled that graduate assistants should be able to unionize because increased responsibility had turned them into workers.
In other NLRB news, the so-called War on Terror was invoked by Bush administration appointees last week to take away the right of non-union workers to have a co-worker present while in a disciplinary meeting with the boss. Though union members have enjoyed what are called Weingarten rights since 1975, it wasn't until 2000 that the NLRB ruled non-union workers could have the protection of a witness in employer meetings. Ronald Meisberg, a Bush recess NLRB appointee, stated that possible terrorist attacks created a rise in the need for investigatory interviews.
United Airlines has announced plans to delay making payments to its employees' pension funds. The bankrupt airline had its request for federal loan guarantees rejected at the end of June. The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers issued a statement of concern that the United decision threatens the stability of other pension plans. While United has said there are no plans to defer the pilot's pension, the strongest of four plans operated by the company, the airline does plan to defer payments to pensions for mechanics, flight attendants, and counter representatives. Union leaders and industry analysts fear that the airline may be planning to cut those pensions entirely.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new Economic Policy Institute report finds that close to 50% of all stock in the United States is owned by just 1% of the population. In addition, only 40% of people in the U.S. held stock worth more than $5,000. Half of all Americans don't own any stocks at all, including pension plans, which are the basis for a secure retirement.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send your job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
Take the A-Train. Ride that Wabash Cannonball. Hear the clickety-clack of the Orange Blossom Special. Trains are more than a part of our history. They're a rich part of our culture. But are they a part of our future? I'm not talking here about the enormous potential of long-distance trains. Upgrading Amtrak and building a top-of-the-line high-speed train system between our population centers. Rather, I'm focused today on the promise of rail travel within our great metro areas. I've ridden these local systems in the Bay Area, Chicago, Washington, D.C., and elsewhere. They're simple, handy, efficient, fast, inexpensive, and a joyous way to get to where you're going. They also move hundreds of thousands of people a day without creating traffic jams or smog, and they create thousands of good jobs at good wages. Here's what one observer says. Mass transit is an excellent substitute for roads. These are not the words of some anti-auto Earth Firster, but of Paul Wyrick, an icon of right-wing thinking. To him, urban train systems make all kinds of sense and are a legitimate focus for federal, state, and local spending. Public demand for these systems is strong. Ridership is up 21% in the last 5 years. New systems in Dallas, Denver, Salt Lake City, and elsewhere are exceeding expectations, and there's a backlog of 200 local transit projects seeking federal matching funds. There's the problem. The Bushites, tagged by Wyrick as the most anti-rail administration in our country's history of mass transit, is trying to gut federal support. In their zeal for fiscal conservatism, writes Wyrick, they are prepared to scuttle one of the most successful government programs of all time. This is Jim Hightower saying, Missing the Train, a new report by the Sierra Club, highlights projects in Tampa Bay, Portland, Houston, Milwaukee, and elsewhere endangered by Bush's cuts. Get a copy, 202-675-7915.
LendingTree.com presents How to Get Out from Under Debt. First, take an average guy.
Hello.
Then add some credit card debt, a car payment, and a student loan.
Ow.
To get out from under all this debt, get a debt consolidation loan from LendingTree.com, where banks compete and you choose the loan that's right for you. Call 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com.
Equal housing opportunity. Summer restrictions may apply. See website for details.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program today brought to you by the Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research. You can visit their website at cascr.org. Futurist Benjamin Krim, you can call their number 1-888, as in 888-242-8272. And Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com on the web. As well as the Progressive and In These Times, two great magazines. Outagamie County Supervisor Jason Nelson might be new to politics. This is Outagamie County, Wisconsin. Okay. He may be new to politics, but he already can attest to the price of freedom of speech, notes the Appleton, Wisconsin Post-Crescent in an article by Ed Lowe. Nelson, who joined the county board this week, says he got bounced from the VIP list for President Bush's speech Wednesday at the Resch Center in Ashwaubenon. No, there's two N's there. Ashwaubenon, because of inappropriate attire. Inappropriate attire. Nelson attended a John Kerry for President rally at Fond du Lac earlier in the day. It's a guy, he's going to the Kerry event, and then he goes to the Bush event. Sounds like somebody who wants to be an informed voter to me. Anyhow, he attended the Kerry rally earlier before taking his spot in line outside the Bush campaign venue. The event was part of a day-long Bush campaign bus tour through eastern Wisconsin. Nelson said he was ejected. Now, get this. This is last week I told you the story about the guy in West Virginia who was arrested because he had on an anti-Bush T-shirt. Standing next to people with pro-Bush T-shirts, he had a ticket to get into the Bush event. And they arrested him because of his anti-Bush T-shirt. We shouldn't have profanity or anything on it. It was just, you know, I forget exactly what the words were. But, you know, we did the story last week. But it was just, you know, very straightforward. You know, no war, no Bush, something like that. And you know, people standing right next to him had T-shirts on that said, you know, Bush, Cheney, 04, you know, four more years, or whatever. And they arrested him. They took him downtown, fingerprinted him, handcuffed him. His wife, actually, it was a couple. It was both of them. And the wife of the couple worked for FEMA, and she lost her contract with FEMA. She lost her income as a result of being arrested. At this, and this wasn't even a campaign stop, the one in West Virginia for George Bush. This was an official presidential visit. So much for the First Amendment, right? So here now, they were wearing obvious T-shirts where everybody could read the message. This one, this guy, this brand new, this guy in Outagamie, Wisconsin, Jason Nelson, he's a county supervisor. He was wearing a T-shirt underneath a heavy cotton button-down shirt. In other words, he's wearing a T-shirt underneath the shirt. He says, I have no idea how they knew I was wearing it. It was a John Kerry for President T-shirt he was wearing underneath the shirt. He said, I have no idea. Whether betrayed by a Republican informant or by a dash of Kerry green above the buttons, Nelson found himself plucked from the line and ordered to shed his outer shirt. I don't know if it was because of the way I was dressed, he said. I work construction, so I wasn't as dressed up like some of the other people. Once exposed, the female election worker who singled Nelson out snatched the VIP ticket from his hand and called the police! The police! Does the word police state have any meaning? Look at his shirt! Look at his shirt! Nelson recalled the woman telling the Ashwaubenon public safety officer who answered the call. Nelson says the cop told him, you gotta go, and sternly directed him to a Secret Service contingent that spent 7 or 8 minutes checking him out before ejecting him from the property. Nelson says he's not a card-carrying Democrat, and he emerged from the experience, quote, disgusted and confused. I kept asking, he says, did I do something illegal? I was told no by the Secret Service agents. But he got thrown out. Nelson says he sought to attend the speech because, quote, he wanted to hear what Bush had to say, end quote. Not to make a political statement. I was told that no law was broken, Nelson said, but I was nearly treated like a criminal for the terrible crime of wearing a T-shirt underneath a shirt. And as reported earlier, the Republican Party of Michigan just delivered 40,000 petitions for Ralph Nader to the Michigan Secretary of State to make sure that Ralph Nader gets on the ballot in Michigan. The Republican Party, officially, the Republican Party, the 40,000 signatures of Republicans to the Secretary of State saying, please put Ralph Nader on the ballot. Why? Well, because all of a sudden the Republican Party of Michigan thinks it's really important that third-party candidates have a voice. Now, they're not doing this for any other third-party candidates, but this one in particular. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to weigh in on the issues of the day. Jerry Falwell may be at some risk, and I'd like to actually get into this a little more depth of what's going on, what's the status of the church-state separation issue. and the history of it, for that matter. Let's do it after we take a call here. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Tom in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
I am great.
I just wanted to make a couple comments. When I think it was Bill called from New Mexico earlier, he wanted to make a little talk about the Greens. Let's just mention that in any other country, the Democrat Party would be at least five other parties. You know, when you say take over.
Right, because of proportional representation, because they could be five other parties.
Exactly.
And so would the Republicans.
It was not a couple years away from IRV, by the way.
Yeah.
It's been voted in one committee in the Senate here once and voted approved. And then the Democrat leadership in this state at that point decided they wanted to crush the Greens, and all the energy was taken away from that fight.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, Tom, just as an FYI, the official name is the Democratic Party, not the Democrat Party.
There is no such thing
as the Democrat Party. The Republicans like to call them that, but you know, because it's demeaning, but there is no such thing as the Democrat Party.
When the Democratic Party, I'll accede to your wishes, when the Democratic Party calls the Green Party Greenies as a diminutive, thinking they're the junior party, then they have been co-opted by the corporatists. When you talk Al Frame and Terry McAuliffe, I've been in a meeting with Terry McAuliffe, and I've said, you need to find out what people are thinking. And he has said directly to me, no, I don't. I'll tell people what to think. Now, that's when the leadership and the hierarchy is totally co-opted and corrupt. And it's here in New Mexico, it's extreme.
Yeah.
If you're not aware of it, it's just...
This, Tom, is why I strongly suggest that if people have any passion for this nation at all, if they want to see this country go in what they consider to be the correct direction, and, you know, back to the ideals of the founders of this nation, back to some egalitarian sense, call it liberal, call it whatever you want, that they get involved with politics, that people need to join their party. They need to join one of these two parties,
let me tell you what happens to people in the Democratic Party. People who work for 20, 25 years for goals are shut out of committees. They're not allowed to put their two cents in. When you say liberal, that's also been co-opted. The neo-lib movement is just as bad as the neocon movement. Neither one of them resemble their respective cognomen.
I don't know. You know, I still think that Dennis Kucinich is a shining light, and that there are
1%.
1%. Sure. And that's where it starts.
And I think he was great in Ralph Nader. I interviewed him on my radio show. I interviewed Ralph, and he said, yeah, vote for Dennis. And if you vote for Dennis, I don't see any reason for me running.
But see, the point is, Tom, that the way that the conservatives seized control, I'm just suggesting that people do the exact same thing that the conservatives did and the corporatists did with the Republican Party, and that they're trying now to do with the Democratic Party.
They have already done it to the Democratic
Party. Well, to a large extent. I agree with you. To a large extent. But it's not 100% like it is with the Republicans.
When John Kerry supports drilling it and onward, when he supports keeping troops in Iraq in no time frame, when he supports so many goals, he's moving to the right and he's ignoring the progressives because he feels that he can. Because they hate George Bush.
At the same time, you know, come on, Tom. John Kerry is not going to be eviscerating the environment the way that George Bush is. He's not going to be trashing the unemployed the way George Bush is.
Will you apologize for him the way that the progressives apologized for Bill Clinton for 8 years? Will he push the Republican agenda?
You know, okay. I am. If you listen to this program regularly, you know I'm one of the first people to criticize Bill Clinton on the economic issues, on his so-called welfare reform, and on signing NAFTA and GATT, on, you know, absolutely.
Your books. You're one of my heroes. I agree. But, you know, when people do apologize, we can't criticize Kerry or we'll get another Bush in the office is what we'll hear if he gets elected.
Yeah, I'm not apologizing for John Kerry, Tom. I'm saying that I will vote for John Kerry in the hopes that, as Howard Zinn says, John Kerry may be susceptible to political pressure from within his own party if we participate and join in that party. There's no way that George Bush is going to be susceptible to any political power from anybody who's not a multimillionaire or a multinational corporation. It just boils down to that.
And I think that Kerry's going to be listening to the same people that Bush listens to. I'm fairly disheartened about the process. In this state,
I'd say, Tom, join the party.
I couldn't hear you. What?
Join the party. Join the Democratic Party. Why not get in?
What happened in this state? They did away with the presidential primary for the Democratic Party. They held a caucus. It was run by the party with no oversight by the state.
What you're describing, Tom, is a moribund party. You're describing a party that doesn't have enough of people like you and me in it. So instead of sitting around and complaining about it, instead of pointing our fingers, instead of, you know, whining about it, why don't you join the party and do something about it?
You know, in 1968, I thought that was the way to go. 1970, 72, I thought it was the way to go, and it just never happened. You know, people didn't do it. You know, we'll be.
You didn't do it, right?
Voices in the wilderness, little voices out there that are sidelined saying, well, why don't you just join this little committee and you can put a little bit of effort into it. And that's why the Greens were really formed, is because they have a progressive voice. And you're right. It's more effective in the local and state races right now. And I'm not supporting Ralph Nader. I'm not supporting David Cobb. I respect both of them highly. The people that came out to vote for Ralph Nader in 2000 are the ones that gave the Senate back to the Senate, to the Democratic Party, which they promptly gave back to the Republicans when they ran to the right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I am absolutely of the opinion that there is a tremendous, just an absolute tremendous asset there in the Democratic Party, and it's not completely gone yet. And
there are wonderful people there. I agree.
We have to participate. We have to take it back, or you know,
we have to work in coalition.
Sure. Well, see, if we had instant runoff voting, I would be right there with you. I would be saying, you know, yes, you know, let's split up the parties, and that's of course why both the Democrats and the Republicans have opposed instant runoff voting, the two parties opposed the enfranchisement of women. They opposed civil rights for a long, long time. They opposed
the Republicans are the ones actually, you know, not and I. I disagree with 95% of what Republicans stand for, but it was under them that the enfranchisement of women came and the enfranchisement of...
Well, sure, because the progressive and populist movement split out of the Republican Party in 1872 because the Republicans were originally a reform party in the 1850s.
Exactly.
But anyhow, 20 minutes past the time, we got a boogie. Thanks for the call.
Care,
I appreciate it.
You are a great hero, and keep doing the good fight.
Thanks, Tom. Bless you. Do good. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told. If you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
When I was feeling sad and kind of blue, I didn't know what I was gonna do. The communists were coming around, they were in the air, they were on the ground, they were all over.
They were all over. But you gotta do something, right, Bob? You gotta do something. Welcome back. I just gotta hear the next verse.
Down most hurriedly and joined the John Birch Society.
Oh, yeah,
got
I remember
me a
them.
Secret membership card. Went back to my backyard and started looking on the sidewalk.
Remarkable. Anyhow, welcome back 25 minutes before or after the hour. I remember the John Birch Society. I mean, I actually, when I was a teenager, a friend of mine was like really into the John Birch Society. And I have read their literature. I actually went to one of their meetings. And, you know, what's funny is you discover, even when somebody is completely ideologically opposite you, that when you get right down to the bottom of it all, that we're all trying to work toward the same thing. It's just, you know, we may have different visions of how to bring it about or different ideas about what's the best way to achieve it. But my sense of the folks in the John Birch Society, which offends me, right, with their politics, is that what they really wanted was a strong, safe America and a good life for their families and their kids. And, you know, the same thing that I saw in the Students for a Democratic Society and the SDS. The same thing that you see in the Republicans, the Democrats, the Greens, I mean, right across the board. It's just, you know, everybody has a different idea about how to accomplish that. And that's where I think, you know, looking at history tells us what works and what doesn't. There is no successful libertarian nation out there, for example. Never has been, never will be. That's a whole other, you know, economic rant. But anyhow, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, if you'd like to call in. John in Palm Springs, California is on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey there, Tom. Just a couple of quick comments. Last week, you had a clip from Larry Klayman talking about how Al-Qaeda may have suitcase nukes in the United States.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I found a source. When I was at the bookstore the other day, I came across a book called Osama's Revenge, The Next 9/11, by Paul Williams. And apparently this is, he's talking about exactly the same thing. So I think this might be where Larry Klayman got his information from.
Oh, interesting. Well, actually, he told me that, and in the interview he said it, that he had heard this from a couple of politicians.
Ah, okay.
He's running for the United States Senate from Florida, and that he said that basically it's an open secret in Washington, D.C. among the political you know, among politicians.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, whether it is or not, I can't attest to it. That's just what he's saying. Although Rama made the comment this morning when he came in. He says, you know, ever since hearing that, listening to people talk about the possibility of an attack or a disruption of the elections or whatever, when you think of that as the framing device, as the context for their thinking, a lot of the comments that even Democrats and progressives are making who are in politics in Washington, D.C., where they're agreeing with Tom Ridge and they're agreeing with John Ashcroft about the fact that, you know, we're not safe, we're not scared. Gary Hart last night on TV, you know, talking about how, you know, we're in a very dangerous situation. We don't have the National Guard, which should defend us, is not here. It's in Iraq.
Right,
and,
exactly.
And, you know, we haven't been putting money into Homeland Security. We haven't been putting things into port protection. We have, because we've spent, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars in Iraq, you know, and George Bush's, you know, Don Quixote quest for oil and to prove his daddy, he's better than his daddy. I mean, you know, it's.
If I can just go back to the Ralph Nader thing for a second.
Okay,
so
you got about 10 seconds, John.
Okay, I'm just curious. If Ralph Nader has the same electors, wouldn't that just increase the problem? Because if you still have a first-past-the-post election and Kerry gets 35, Nader gets 25, Bush gets 40, the elector goes to Bush and not to either Kerry or Nader.
No, because each vote, if Kerry and Nader shared the same electors, then a Kerry vote is one vote for the elector, a Nader vote is a second vote for the elector.
So okay. There's
you accumulate the total of the votes.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks you, John. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good one. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Talk radio for the rest of us.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. As part of an ongoing saga to obtain a contract, today marks the beginning of round-the-clock picketing by New York City fire, police, and teachers unions at Madison Square Garden, the future site of this year's Republican National Convention. Mayor Bloomberg wants the public workers to accept a 5% raise over 3 years, but with inflation averaging 2.25% annually, this is essentially a pay cut. The unions have been working for 2 years without a contract, and officials say they're having a tough time recruiting and retaining after the September 11th terrorist attacks.
Teaching and research assistants at private universities have no right to unionize. That was the ruling of the National Labor Relations Board last week in a case involving Brown University. The Republican-controlled board ruled that RAs and TAs are students and not workers. It was a reversal of a decision made 4 years ago when the board was controlled by Democrats. At that time, the court ruled that graduate assistants should be able to unionize because increased responsibility had turned them into workers.
In other NLRB news, the so-called war on terror was invoked by Bush administration appointees last week to take away the right of non-union workers to have a co-worker present while in a disciplinary meeting with the boss. Though union members have enjoyed what are called Weingarten rights since 1975, it wasn't until 2000 that the NLRB ruled non-union workers could have the protection of a witness in employer meetings. Ronald Meisberg, a Bush recess NLRB appointee, stated that possible terrorist attacks created a rise in the need for investigatory interviews.
United Airlines has announced plans to delay making payments to its employees' pension funds. The bankrupt airline had its request for federal loan guarantees rejected at the end of June. The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers issued a statement of concern that the United decision threatens the stability of other pension plans. While United has said there are no plans to defer the pilot's pension, the strongest of four plans operated by the company, the airline does plan to defer payments to pensions for mechanics, flight attendants, and counter representatives. Union leaders and industry analysts fear that the airline may be planning to cut those pensions entirely.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new Economic Policy Institute report finds that close to 50% of all stock in the United States is owned by just 1% of the population. In addition, only 40% of people in the U.S. held stock worth more than $5,000. Half of all Americans don't own any stocks at all, including pension plans, which are the basis for a secure retirement. You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Ooh, by powder. For his greed, who for his hunger, and who shall I say is calling?
And welcome back. The next fourth turning is due to begin shortly after the new millennium. Around the year 2005, a sudden spark will catalyze a crisis mood, right? William Strauss and Neil Howe. In their 1997 book, The Fourth Turning, An American Prophecy, they say a political and economic trust will implode. Real hardship will beset the land with severe distress that could involve questions of class, race, nation, and empire. Yet this time of trouble will bring seeds of social rebirth. Americans will share a regret about recent mistakes and a resolute new consensus about what to do. The very survival of the nation will feel at stake. Sometime before the year 2025, America will pass through a great gate in history commensurate with the American Revolution, Civil War, and twin emergencies of the Great Depression and World War II. And this is absolutely fascinating. The book is called The Fourth Turning, American Prophecy. It was written eight years ago? And what's remarkable is that they are looking back at literally hundreds, like 300 or 400 years of history, and they point out that every 80 years, every fourth generation, a generation is roughly 20 years, 20, 21, 22. Jefferson defined a generation as 19 years. Lifespans have changed. But roughly every fourth generation, there is a major change, a major crisis that we hit. And it's because the generation that lives through a crisis produces the offspring who are the slow and steady builders. Think of, America in the 1940s, 1950s. And they produce offspring, a generation who are the questioners. Think the 60s and 70s. And then they produce a generation who are essentially lusters after wealth and relatively apathetic. Think the 90s, and their behavior produces a crisis, which leads to, now we're back to, to the fifth generation, or the first revision of the, and that another generation that faces a crisis in every 80 years. And so 80 years ago was the Great Depression. 80 years before that was the Civil War. 80 years before that was the American Revolution. And they go, all the way back to the War of the Roses. It's 80 years before the Revolutionary War was the Glorious Revolution of 1675 to 1704. Roughly 80 years before that was the Armada Crisis of 1569 to 1594. Roughly 80 years before that was the War of the Roses, 1459 to 1487. And they say that every 80 years there are these four turnings produced by these four generations. And the fourth turning is the one of greatest danger and maximum impact on the world. And it's due to happen any day now if it's not already underway. This is an absolutely fascinating book. We're going to have the authors on Wednesday, I believe in the first hour of our program. No, it'll be in the second hour, 1 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday. William Strauss is going to be on, one of the authors of this book. It is a book that is, even though it was written 8 years ago, and these two authors have actually written a couple of books since then, I think it's one of the most important books that's been written in the last 30 years. It's called The Fourth Turning by Strauss and Howe, and I just wanted to give you a heads up on it, let you know about that. Jerry Falwell may be in a little trouble here. The Reverend Barry Lynn, who is the Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, has filed a complaint with the Internal Revenue Service, charging that the organization run by the Reverend Jerry Falwell has violated the requirements of its tax-exempt status. See, one of the things, here's how it works. A nonprofit organization, like a church, doesn't have to pay taxes. They don't have to pay income taxes. They don't have to pay property taxes. And yet they are using the public streets. They are using our public education system in that they have employees or members who are educated. They are using our court system in that they are participating in the, you know, whatever they're doing. They need to be able to enforce contracts and to that sort of thing. They are using our publicly funded police departments to protect their property. They are using our publicly funded fire departments to protect their property. They are making use of the air and the water that we make sure is clean and pure, and the food supply, and their employees are, or their members are making use of, you know, safe pharmaceuticals and whatnot. You know, the list goes on. The commons, those things that we collectively own and pay for in common, nonprofits get a free ride on. This is a really big deal, particularly churches. And the reason why we allow this is because when they were putting this country together in the early days, they said, you know, there are some groups, there are some functions that contribute significantly to the nation, and they really deserve to be appropriately separate from the functions of the nation. And the biggest one, of course, was religion. That religion serves a very valuable and useful purpose in people's lives. For many people, their religion gives their lives meaning and significance and you know, a great source of hope. But we've got to be very clear that government and religion don't interfere with each other, because the founders, saw the Salem witch trials. I mean, it wasn't in their generation. It was almost 100 years before the founding of this country. But they certainly remembered it. It was in the memory of their families, right? They saw, and for that matter, in 1776, much of the state of Massachusetts was under theocratic control. It was the reason why Ben Franklin, in the 1740s, when he was a teenager, left Boston and moved to Philadelphia, because he was just so offended by the preachers running the city. And so the founders said, you know, we're going to separate these things, church and state. A wall of separation, to quote Thomas Jefferson, between church and state. And if we're going to separate them, then, you know, we can't tax them. I mean, that's how separate we're going to make these churches. We're going to make them so separate that we're not even going to charge them taxes. It's almost like they're independent nations, right? We're not going to mess with their affairs. And the only thing that we ask of them in exchange for that is that they not mess with our affairs. That is, you know, they not mess with our democracy. A religious leader using the tax-exempt facilities of their religion endorses a political candidate. At that point, they have stepped over the line, we the people say, and have said for 200 years. They have stepped over the line, and we are going to say, sorry, you can't have it both ways. You can't be tax exempt and, you know, claiming that you're a church, and at the same time say that you want to mess in the matters of the state. Can't do it. And so Barry Lynn has filed this lawsuit against Jerry Falwell. Because Jerry Falwell, for example, in his website, Falwell.com, in his last newsletter, he says, for conservative people of faith, voting for principle this year means voting for the re-election of George W. Bush. He goes on to say, I'm a Christian. And he goes through a long list of others. And to get serious about re-electing George Bush. He's also asked for contributions to a political action committee run by the social conservative Gary Bauer. Now, what I find particularly fascinating about this is that when he was confronted about this, Jerry Falwell says that his lobbying organization, quote, doesn't support candidates or endorse them. And then at the same time, he says that from the pulpit of his church, the Thomas Road Baptist Church, quote, I support President Bush. I support him on Sunday mornings from the pulpit. He's got a website called Jerry Falwell Ministries, and he's got a nonprofit called Jerry Falwell Ministries. However, when you make donations on the website of Jerry Falwell Ministries, you don't know where the money's going. There's no label. In an interview, Mr. Falwell said the site was owned by his lobbying group, not by Jerry Falwell Ministries. He said the label on the site referred generically to the many ministries he runs. Is the word weasel starting to take on new meaning? This isn't the first time, by the way. Mr. Falwell has... I don't know if there was a trial and a conviction, but Mr. Falwell has paid $50,000 in tax penalties for political activity in 1986 and 87. As a result of 1993, a lawsuit against the tax-exempt religious organization that produces his old-time Gospel Hour TV program. So, it's a good step, but I think it really illuminates a larger issue. Nicholas Kristof talks about it in today's New York Times. The newest Left Behind book, 60 million books. Can you imagine if in Saudi Arabia they had published a book that said Muhammad has returned to the earth and he stretches out his hand and Christians everywhere begin to die? Well, that's what this book says, you know, says to Christians. Jesus merely raised one hand a few inches and a yawning chasm opened in the earth, stretching far and wide enough to swallow all of them. They tumbled in, howling and screeching, but their wailing was soon squashed, and all was silent when the earth closed itself again. You know, I've actually read the New Testament. I've read the entire Bible. I mean, literally, I got one of those, you know, read through the Bible in a year things, where every night you read for about 20 minutes, and at the end of a year, you've read the whole Bible all the way. I did that 4 years in a row in my youth, in my 30s, actually. And this is not the Jesus that I knew, that I read about. I mean, maybe it's the John's vision, and maybe it's Paul's opinion, but it's not. You read the anyway. Argue religion at your own peril, but this I think this is really scary. This new angry Christianity coming out at the same time that the angry Islam is coming out. Perhaps one is in reaction to the other, but I think this is a dangerous precedent. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to be on the program. We've got a couple calls here. Let's get to them. Becky, a long-haul driver on the road. Where are you on the road, Becky?
Here in the Baltimore area right now.
Oh, great. What's up?
Oh, not too much, but I heard a rumor the other day about House Bill wanting to pass some kind of deal about making all the interstates toll roads.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. I mean, this is part of the conservative agenda for a long time has been to privatize everything that's public, right? To privatize Social Security so that the banks can make money on our retirements, to privatize roads, and it's being done by a lot of localities. I remember when we lived in Atlanta, the city privatized one of the roads. You know, it's a toll road now. But people will not stand for it. Ain't going to happen.
Yeah, really.
They're going to keep trying. You know.
Yeah, they're going to keep trying, I mean, because, you know, we're barely making enough money now, but if we had to pay a toll, it'd be ridiculous.
No, it's crazy. But what you're identifying, what you're highlighting there, Becky, is the core belief of economic conservatives, which is that government is not the solution. Government is the problem. Get government out. Bring in corporations. Corporations are the solution. They'll take care of everything. When our health care is in the hands of corporations, when our retirement is in the hands of corporations, when our job security is in the hands of corporations and government has no power, then America will be a paradise. This is what they say. And of course, the people saying it are, by and large, the owners of the corporations. So it's, what a surprise, right? What a surprise.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I just wanted to find out about that.
Yeah, no, it's not going to happen. But, yeah, these kind of ideas, crackpot ideas have been around for a long time. Becky, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. 1-866-889-8894. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Roy, what's up?
Oh, just everything, Tom. We had a heck of a good party last night. There was about 35 or 40 of us.
Was this for that Outfoxed movie?
Outfoxed. What a terrific movie.
I just ordered a copy from BuzzFlash.com. It hasn't arrived, so I haven't seen it.
Again, it was like Uncovered the War on Iraq. There wasn't a thing in the movie I didn't know, but I had just never seen it all put together so well. And it was so worth it.
Yeah.
And we had four or five kind of leaners. They just didn't know what we knew. And it was like Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson had just dunked them under the water and just brought them up, and we brought them.
You are healed, my brother. You are healed. Awaken.
You know, when you were talking about Falwell's $50,000 fine, you know, that's walking around pocket change money.
Oh, sure. It's cost of doing business.
$1 million like he.
Yeah.
I used to say that Pat Robertson was the most dangerous man in the United States because he not only had devoted, fanatical followers, he had a broadcast network. Of course, he sold his broadcast network to... Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, really? I knew he sold it for $1 billion. I didn't realize that Murdoch had bought it.
Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, very interesting.
And, of course, I still feel that, you know, even with $1 billion, he's sitting there out there fleecing old widow women like my mother for $25 a month.
Yeah, amazing.
And making powerful, powerful moves, buying the Republican Party. And
yeah,
they just kind of, you know, it's all in one lockstep.
Yep, yep, moving right along. It's the new fascism, Roy. I wrote a piece, an op-ed piece on www.commondreams.org today about this very topic. I encourage you to check it out. Roy, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
Check that music out too, Tom.
There you go.
I sent you that email on.
Okay, I'll check it out. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and must share the world's resources to create. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super. You order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, the Super Libido formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his libido formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
A leading environmentalist says a growing gap between haves and have-nots is at the root of international terrorism. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Resentment is on the rise around the world, according to Paul Ehrlich, and it's directed at the world's wealthiest societies. Ehrlich and his wife Anne have written a new book called One with Nineveh. It argues that the growing gap between rich and poor countries is driving terrorism.
9/11 should have been more than catastrophic enough to open our eyes to dealing with the roots of terrorism. After all, we live in a world where something like 3 billion people live on $2 a day or less, while the average European cow is subsidized to a tune of $2.50 a day.
Ehrlich says he's not justifying acts of terrorism, but he says we should figure out what drives it. Most of the people drawn to terrorist groups come from desperately poor communities in places like Pakistan.
The basic root of terrorism, of course, is that many, many people are getting educated in poor countries but have no prospects for decent livings, and there are even more people who are not educated who basically just feel desperate. That tends to enrage them.
Ehrlich says it's in our own interest to help fight poverty and disease in developing countries.
The gap between the rich and the poor, which is growing in the United States and between nations in many cases, is something we all should be concerned about, because remember, not only are the poor more susceptible to diseases that can move to us, but of course they also are now armed with nuclear weapons, with biological weapons, with chemical weapons, and so they are able to make lots of trouble for us, even if we thought it were ethical for us to continue to live high on the hog while they starve.
That's Paul Ehrlich, author of the new book, One with Nineveh. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Seagreen of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm sailing away.
No, no, come back.
Set an open course for the virgin sea.
No, no, no. It's time to come back. Time to participate. Get registered. Get ready to vote. Get on others by futurist Benjamin Krim. You can get a free audio from them by dialing 1-888-242-8272. 1-888-242-8272. And our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. And taxi driver number 12 in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, number 12, how you doing?
You know, I called you a few minutes ago, and I got distracted by a customer who was voicing his opinion about this Jerry Falwell thing, and I had to listen to him.
Okay.
And he made a good point. And my problem with these kind of lawsuits is that it depends whether the preacher or whoever is using... You should be allowed absolute free speech, and I don't believe that you should be, you know, threatened with a lawsuit or some sort of like a financial penalty if you say vote for this person or vote for that person. The only thing that I would say that would qualify that is if the person is using like company letterhead that's tax exempt or paid broadcast.
Well, hang on just a second, number 12. Here's the point. It's not, number one, it's not a lawsuit. It's a complaint to the Internal Revenue Service. And number two, they're not threatening to penalize him. They're threatening to take away from him a benefit that he has that you and I don't have, which is that he doesn't have to pay taxes.
Okay.
And the only reason he has that benefit is because the only reason that he can have that benefit is because he agrees to play by the rules. And the rules are you don't mess in politics.
I don't really think that's... I think the government's the thing that's supposed to be on the short leash here, not your First Amendment right to freedom of religion to express whatever you want to do in whatever venue you want to.
He's absolutely free to say anything he wants from the pulpit, but he cannot say then at the same time, and by the way, I don't want to pay taxes. We're not talking
But what if he's doing it, but he's not using any money to do it?
Well, then there's no issue. I mean, Jerry Falwell's welcome to stand up there and say, you know, vote for Adolf Hitler if he wants. He can be in favor of any political candidate as long as he doesn't want you and I to pay for his fire protection with our taxes, and he doesn't have to pay any.
The tax exempt to do this. If he is, I believe that maybe.
Well, he definitely is. He definitely is, because from the pulpit, he's telling people to vote for George Bush, and that's just a violation of it. Number 12, thanks for the call. We got to boogie on. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Thanks to Rama today for engineering our program. Rama Schneider, who showed up. Thanks to Louise for producing it. Thanks to Brad Wallerod for our music, and Shelby for streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org. Thanks to our sponsors for helping keep us on the air. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to Jay for producing and playing our music and our theme music. And thanks to you for showing up. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global War, Hours of Ancient Sunlight, details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in book.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.